Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining for live broadcast of Ukrainian Spaces, or if you're listening to us as a podcast already in recorded version. So thank you so much for joining us. Валерія, привіт. Слава Україні.
Hey, героям слава.
What you've been up to since our last live session?
I don't know, it's like getting closer to a year of our lives changing quite significantly, and I've been like doing a lot of thinking and just reflecting. Time is upon us, I feel like, and it's just been a lot. How about you?
I've been completely obsessed over this story with the Russian opposition channel being stripped of the license in Latvia, and I know that lots of foreigners think this is kind of, you know, a petty thing, and Ukrainians are just overjoying over this because of some pettiness or whatever. But I honestly do not care about this channel whatsoever. After years of working with Russian opposition journalists, I just know too much to care. But I think it's still important for the rest of foreigners to catch up, because it's such a great story where Russian opposition people themselves just show all the true colors, something we've been all warning the rest of the world for literally years. And they just do that job for us now. And you folks can all see now all the entitlement and all the drama and all the blindness, imperial blindness that those people have.
Basically, to make it even clearer, and of course this is not everyone, this is particularly just people who have been active around this whole story, but, you know, if you resort to essentially degrading the country that's hosting you, aka Latvia, in your response to whatever situation it may be, and saying that, you know, we've had to deal with issues that were much bigger than, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but like stupid little Latvia, and, you know, we were the ones who actually brought like good journalism and information to like provincial culture of Latvia. That just like, hopefully by now, those of you who have been listening to our podcast can see and hear a lot of the rhetoric that we've been trying to highlight, essentially, that's been, you know, to say the least, reductive to people, to nations that the Russian Empire, Soviet Union colonized.
I think this week it's been extra hard to me because of some personal family issues, and my grandma had a stroke, and it happened around the same time as that story was developing. And at first I wasn't really comfortable, I think, to share that kind of information, because I mean, every day Ukrainians have so much trauma and so much pain to share. Sometimes you don't want to share anymore just because you don't want other people to look at you with, say, pity, or, you know, that another horrible thing happened. But I decided to share that story anyway with the rest of you, because I saw there's so much coverage of this issue of Russians, you know, opposition Russians being dropped from their license in Latvia. And then that personal family story was unfolding, and me realizing that my 93-year-old grandma, you know, had a stroke. She's in her apartment without heat, without lights, because of Russian shelling. And, you know, there are millions of people like that in Ukraine, and they don't get a second of the same coverage as you know, that Russian TV channel got. So, yeah, so I just couldn't. I had to spoke out, because I also watched that video of a wealthy Russian woman, the CEO of that channel, in comfort of her powered and heated EU house, crying about her TV station, while the doctors could not get to my grandma because they were scared of Russian rockets. And I thought that this is just my red line. And this is something I really want us also to talk about. So, Leah, hi.
Hi, I'm here. Can you hear me well?
Yes, perfectly. Leah, Thank you so much for joining us. We have a golden rule, definitely, for Ukrainian Spaces. Each of our featured Ukrainians always introduce themselves the way they would like. So if you don't mind, please tell us who you are, where you come from, and maybe a little bit how your life has changed in the last 9 months.
So where do I start? I'm Lia Dostlieva. I'm an artist, I'm a cultural anthropologist. Also, I write, so I'm kind of an essayist. I came from Donetsk, east of Ukraine. You know, might heard the name of the city in the news. Yeah, so for the last 8 years, I've been living in Poland, mostly because of war. And now I'm speaking with you from my studio in Maastricht in Jan van Eyck Academy, because I'm on residency here, and it's also kind of super weird to be here in this very nice, super privileged environment, when you technically as an artist have an access to everything you might need, and you technically can do everything you want, and at the same time it's a war situation, and you're kind of in between of these two worlds, which are very different. But when I got here, I understood how different it is for people who are far from Ukraine and who have been in this kind of privileged and really nice environment all the time, how hard it might be for them to get what's really happening. Because, I mean, it's so peaceful and quiet here that sometimes when you even just say the word war, it's kind of too much, you know? Does it make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember that one of the first cities I went to after 24th was actually Amsterdam. And I think it was a couple of weeks ago. And I also shared this on the show as well. And I was so shocked when I got out of plane after a couple of weeks of you know, watching your country going through genocide and your families, you know, being all affected by it. And you see how life for local people is just the same as it used to be. And whatever you're going through, whatever is happening in your hat is just some news that people can discuss, but they might not. And it was absolute shock to me. I just wanted to stand on the street and scream, you know?
Yeah, I know. I mean, for the first time in my life, I got this feeling in 2014 when I was already in Poland on a scholarship, and the war started like for real, this active phase of war, and I would go to a park. It was really warm, nice weather. It was summer, and I would go to a walk to a park, and people like having fun, you know, walking dogs, living their normal life, and you are in this really weird situation when what are you actually feeling is so much different from what you see outside. Yeah, it was really hard. Yeah, and I also wanted to scream all the time, but I didn't. I think I never did this actually.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. And I often think, because you're from Donetsk and from Eastern Ukraine, and often these days I also think that I feel guilty that we didn't. Like now, our families are also, some of us are on occupied territories, and we finally get it, you know, but we couldn't connect as much with people back then to understand all the pain and all the trauma that they were going through. So can you maybe, if you're comfortable sharing, when 24th happened, where were you and how it was for you, and was it different from you know, what you experienced in 2014, losing your home to Russian invasion back then?
Yeah, it was totally different. And of course, I remember. I think everyone remembers. Well, might remember. I got COVID like a few days before 24th. And I remember the evening on 23rd of February when I read some news, something about Sky, and I kind of understood that, okay, this is happening. I mean, this is the war. War is starting like now. And then I went to sleep. And when I woke up, I scrolled Twitter again, and everywhere was those reports about shellings. And because I was sick, I mean, I was laying in my bed, and you technically are super safe because you're not there, you're in Poland, but you can't really do anything except of scrolling your newsfeed. Yes, so because I was in quarantine and I could not go outside. So technically, like first week of the war, I think for me it was instant scrolling on my newsfeed. And it was really hard to stop doing that.
And I was just wondering, you're of course an artist, and a lot of your work, we've spoken basically to other people from different parts of, you know, who do other things, and I was just wondering how art has perhaps helped you throughout this time, or how your art maybe has changed since the beginning of the invasion, or has it changed, and just how has this had an effect also on your creative kind of outlook on life as well as a personal one?
I would say art didn't help much. And it was an entirely different situation in 2014 and now, because in 2014, I got this period when I had to adjust my life to this new situation. One is war for me, but not so much for the rest of the world, because I remember that I went to this office for foreigners in Poland and asked, like, what do I do now? I mean, there is a war in my country. What do I do? And they were super unsure what to do with me. And they said, sorry, we just don't know anything. Maybe you go home or find some kind of work or something. You get a job. And that's what I did. So, I mean, it took me a few years to just adjust to this new reality. And then I slowly started to work with what happened. It was not only me, we mostly worked together with my co-author Andriy Dosliev, so we slowly started to think how can we work with the situation and what is the situation, because at the moment, let's say in 2015, it was super unclear how long will it last. And we all got this feeling that maybe it's something that will pass quickly. And it will be, you know, stupid to start a big project about, you know, our personal loss, or about loss, or about memory, or about broken continuity of personal history, what we eventually did. And soon everything will be over. I mean, what's even the point of this? So we waited and waited and waited, and then we started to work with it, slowly finding this way towards right words, or just some words. How could we explain what is happening? Because at the moment, a lot was said about the situation of IDPS, like this internally displaced people who had to migrate because of the war. But all what was said in terms of help, aid, of basic needs, of jobs, or no place in preschool for children, which is like super important, but it's just basic things. And what was happening to those people on different levels, on levels of feeling and level of personal history. It was at the moment not the topic of any discussion. So we started to think about that. And we created together with Isolacja a project called Reconstruction of Memory. I think it was the very beginning of 2016. And Isolacja at that time already was in Kyiv because, I mean, you probably also might know the history of Isolacja Foundation because for me it's also super symbolic. It was contemporary art center which appeared in Donetsk in 2010. And at the moment I already lived in Kyiv, so I would go from Kyiv to Donetsk to see some contemporary art exhibitions. I mean, just think of this power dynamics, just think of this central periphery connection. And then war started and all premises of Isolacja was taken over. And Russians established their illegal prison and torture chamber. Yeah. And yeah, and it's still happening. And now we know that it's happening every time they took over something, because it's kind of normal practice. The story went sideways, sorry.
No. I mean, I think it's incredibly important to remind all of us that this hasn't started on February 24th, and many, many voices, including you, throughout all these years, that were warning that these things are happening on Russian-occupied territories in eastern Ukraine and Crimea, and it will spread if not stopped, and it did. The rest of us didn't listen, and the rest of the world didn't care as much.
So we created a first big project together with Isolacja about continuity of personal memory, about what was actually lost when occupation happened, what actually happened, and how could we work with this, what could be done and what could be imagined. Because obviously, like, reconstruction of memory is something which is totally impossible to do. You cannot reconstruct your memories. You somehow can just reflect on what happened. I mean, for these 8 years, this topic of lost territory or war trauma or historical trauma, it was always around. I worked with this a lot, but then when the war started again on a very different scale, I got this feeling that I cannot rely on the way I was working before anymore. For me, it was, I mean, I'm also speaking from super privileged position, because as I lost everything 8 years before, I had time to adjust to new situation, to start my life over in the new place. So when the war started again, I was not threatened personally. So I have plenty of time to reflect, you know, to think. Obviously I tried to do some work, to some volunteering, some kind of, you know, donation, but I mean, I still have plenty of time to think. And I felt this huge inner crisis of theoretical frame, of theoretical categories, because when everything started again, this time on a very different scale, I thought, it was very naive thought that, okay, this is, I mean, it's super obvious what's happening. I mean, all those well-educated people from the West, they would understand. They would immediately know what happened because of their education, because of their, you know, privileged position. they will use this like body of knowledge they all produced, I mean, collectivized, for good. And then we started to read these letters, collective letters from so-called intellectuals who asked not to give to Ukraine any military support, any weapons. And I was kind of, what the fuck, what's happening? Why it's not helpful anymore? So, and I mean, I'm trained as a cultural anthropologist because I think that art is one of many tools that cultural anthropology can use in order to think about the world. So I immediately felt that I cannot rely on this body of knowledge anymore because it's a Western production.
We basically also wanted to touch upon the beautifully honest piece that you wrote about the hate that is perceived by and the way that it's, I mean, yeah, perceived by outsiders that Ukrainians want to express, and sort of just explaining like the layers of trauma that Ukrainians feel when we have to be in the same room as Russians. And basically I'm leading to the theme and the name of our spaces today. And I just wanted to ask you if you could tell us briefly about sort of where, because usually people are like, oh my God, Ukrainians again about this, unhinged, blah, blah, blah. But I think we need to more and more explain why we feel the way that we feel and what happens when we are in those spaces and why it's problematic. So I just wanted to hear your perspective on this as well.
Yeah, I mean, there is no brief answer and there is no brief explanation. It's super complex and super, super complicated thing. Because, I mean, it's not about Ukrainians and Russians. It's about an ability to understand that Ukrainian voice is also coming from the position of knowledge, that we are also well equipped to articulate ourselves. Because when you have this colonial dynamics of power, one side is always perceived as lesser. Yeah, and I mean, it's obvious that, I mean, it became obvious, at least for me now, when the war started again, that problematic is not only this invisible, not understandable by many, colonial past of Russia, colonial background of Russian Empire, but also Western colonial project is still alive and well, and it's still very problematic. Despite the fact that it's very short, that so many was said already about it. This power dynamic is still here. It's still happening. We are still lesser. It's still hard to explain what's happening, because you can only explain what's happening if there is another side who are willing to listen to you. Your voice has to come from the position of knowledge, and it's not happening. I mean, at least not always. And this kind of disbalance of power produces this kind of ridiculous situation when you are trying, I mean, you as Ukrainian, I mean, Ukrainian society tries to explain what's happening, like, in very rational, non-emotional way. And what we are saying could be easily reframed as raw emotion, because we are not the ones who can speak from the position of knowledge, because power produces the knowledge and not the way around, the other way around.
That's absolutely that. And I'm glad that you also connected to the feeling of isolation that we as Ukrainians also feel right now, abroad, especially in Western countries, especially in countries where there is a deep colonial traditions of their own. And you're absolutely right that in some conversations, when you're trying to explain, again, from position of knowledge, not only your own knowledge, but generational knowledge of our families going through the same shit over and over again, suffering from the same kind of perpetrator since the same system of oppression over and over again. And you're trying to explain it, and what you see in their eyes is kind of a wail, in a way that they just don't see you as equal voice or equal human being that had, you know, this agency. They might say that, oh, I understand your emotions, oh, let's not discuss the politics, in instantly degrading your argument, and you trying to voice it. And what I also loved about the piece that you wrote, unfortunately, it's only in Ukrainian and Polish, so hopefully
will be English translation very soon.
That would be amazing, because when I read that text, through that text, it all 100% spoke to my experiences every day. But what extremely important point that you made is that how our attempts to explain our situation are automatically being labeled as emotional, and how it's automatically being labeled as marginalized, and how it's actually connected to the very long history of Western colonialism, completely disregarding indigenous voices through this trick of just presenting us as emotional barbarians who do not know what they're saying. They're just blabbering because they're constantly emotional and whatnot. And I really loved that you powerfully made that link and showed people that it's not just about us, not about Ukraine, Russia. There is something of introspection that many Western people should go through themselves as well.
Yeah, I mean, this trick is not new. It's been around forever. We can see the same dynamic when we speak about gender relations, about patriarchy, or about colonial situation, but in some different geography or in some different time. And also when we are talking about hate, I mean, it's a super strong emotion. You cannot really do anything if you are being already labeled as hatred. As hater, right? Because it's like really hard to oppose against it. And I mean, the louder you are saying, hey, I'm not emotional, I'm not unstable, I'm not hater, the weirder it looks. It looks, because I mean, it's really good. It's really hard to oppose this. Because I mean, and it almost always works, I mean, for a person who's doing this, right? And I saw this so many times, and I mean, just recently, I mean, so many examples that I really can read a book about this. Maybe someone really can have to read a book about this. I mean, I just recently opened my Facebook feed, and I saw my friend who's writing about some Western country, you would guess it easily, I think. And she was writing about her language teacher who says that Ukraine is the most corrupt country in the world. And when she showed this person like actual data, he was like, ah, okay, I see. So probably you also don't think Bandera is war criminal, right? I mean, what kind of conversation is this? Is it even conversation? Because for me, it's not.
Yeah. And it's also like about sometimes, you know, playing it like by responding to a lot of these kind of conversations instead of setting our own narrative, which is what you are doing as well in the piece that you wrote and things like that. We sometimes fall into traps. So it's, yeah, you're totally right. And also on the emotional point, I think it's like especially like being a woman, you know, a lot of the time we get, that is something that gets labeled on us and deemed as though, you know, we are not good enough because we are more emotional or whatever. And it's just like, it just all goes into, like, it just shows how people try and, you know, deny someone a right to speak their mind by pointing to this as like a big problem in what we're doing and what we're saying. So it's just, yeah, really important, I guess, in what you're describing here as well. Maxim, I see you're unmuted as well. Oh,
no,
am I gone?
I wanted to add, maybe you guys, maybe you also will agree that apart from that, isn't it normal and isn't it okay thing to do to accept that, yes, Ukrainians can be emotional in this situation and there is nothing wrong with that?
But so can everyone.
Totally. I mean, it's what I wanted to say. Somehow we are in this situation when, like in Western society, we think that emotions are bad. I mean, why is this even a thought? What's wrong with being emotional? It's totally okay being emotional. I mean, also when we're talking about, let's say, cultural anthropology, we already have some works about some articles about emotions, that it also can be a part of this knowledge producing mechanism. It's okay to be emotional. You can also use it in order to describe the world, to research it, to find a new way of expression. And it's totally okay. I mean, there is nothing wrong without with being emotional. We don't need a war to happen to allow us being emotional. It's totally okay being emotional, I mean, in your normal life, in any situations. It's totally okay to be angry or, you know, to grieve when someone died or something bad happened to you. It's totally okay, but somehow now it's more and more marginalized. And also, I mean, we can see this situation with, let's say, abused women who are being medicated and who are being treated for, not because they need help with their, to produce their, to like process their trauma, but because they are behaving or feeling differently, which also bring us back to this point of hatred and variety of emotions that are somehow are not okay.
That they're like uncomfortable for the rest to be around. Like, you know, when I read that text and then I made I made a post on Twitter recollecting my own trauma regarding sexual violence as a queer person, and how now I find all those arguments presented back then at me, because people were uncomfortable dealing with this issue, and they would say all the stuff that you're now saying to me about, you know, Russians as well. Like, are you sure you didn't provoke that person? Well, it's like, it's very hateful not wanting to be around, you know, that person in the same room, because this is like, this doesn't suit you, that will not help you to find allies. And all those other gaslighting comments that made me kind of feel that I'm the problem and not the abuser is the problem. And now I understand that it's a bit overstretched to extrapolate that personal situation to what we're dealing when we're forced into spaces with Russians. But I feel like it's bizarre that I hear the same arguments all the time that make me feel like I'm the problem and my family that it might die at any point is the problem and not the system and not the collective responsibility of the state that is attacking us and the people who are citizens of that state.
Yeah, you know? And if one day we choose if one day we choose to enter these spaces, it should be on our terms as well a lot of the time. And it's all about being forced, right? Like, people feel the need to force these things upon us. But sorry, Elia, please go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same textbook over and over again. I mean, there are like a list of methods. How can you deny someone's agency? And gaslighting is just one of ways you can do that, but I mean, not only. And also reframing like knowledge as raw emotions and dismiss it this way. It's also like one of ways of doing this. And I mean, we can see this, I think, in every situation where is power dynamics are not on our side, I would say. So, I mean, I tried to explain this so many times in so many different settings, and I don't know if I ever was successful in this. Because it's also what is worrying me, that it's kind of echo chamber, you know, that people who are already agree with you, they are like, yes, sure, you are right. And people who think differently, they just think differently, and no matter what you're saying. And for example, once I was invited to a discussion in some art institution, and it was decoloniality in art or something like that, and I explained one of my projects and then said that, you know, but as this the topic of today's gathering is decoloniality, we really have to discuss the issue I have with all of this, because I mean, if you're talking about decolonialities, then we have to talk about this power dynamics within Western society, because look, I have this list of problems. For example, when I speak and person whom I speak with just don't listen to me, because it's impossible to listen, because this person already knows that I'm not able to explain anything. And it's kind of a paradox. And also, I mean, and also I put some examples. When I started to talk about this, at least 8 people left.
No.
Yes, and most of them were like white males. And yes, which is ridiculous, because I also have some like people of color in the audience, and they were laughing like with me, because I mean, they could totally understand what I was talking about. And some just left, you know, and I mean, how do we supposed to have this conversation? I mean, conversation assumes that there is 2 sides, right?
Absolutely. But thank you so much still for speaking out. I think it's important, and there's kind of obligation that probably every Ukrainian has now, if we're in these positions and these spaces, and we just need to claim them and try to use them as a platform. But before we wrap up and ask our, you know, our usual favorite question at the end, I wanted also to quickly ask you, and feel free if you have those advices or not, but since there are so many Ukrainians who are listening, will be listening, and are struggling with this every day, especially those of us abroad, maybe you have some advice to other Ukrainians how to approach these situations, or maybe something that worked for you or works for you. And maybe also for foreigners who want to provide Ukrainians with safe space, how to best approach this issue that we're not end up in a in spaces where we re-traumatize ourselves by being forced into the same room with people we would not like to be in that room at the moment.
I mean, for fellow Ukrainians, I would say, like, hey, you are not alone in this, and it's totally okay to feel not okay with this, and it's definitely happening, and it's not a product of our imagination or something. And also, of course, you can try to fight it, but you have to be comfortable for doing this. You cannot fight if you are in a vulnerable position, and in most cases you are, which is also kind of paradox. So, yeah. And for fellow Westerners, I don't know. I mean, I think there is no way what I'm saying would reach some person who doesn't know what I'm going to say already. But still, I mean, if you don't know what to do, just ask. I mean, ask Ukrainian. Ask Ukrainian what is okay for Ukrainian. I mean, it's super basic thing. I mean, yeah. Don't do something about Ukraine. Don't do something with Ukraine. And I mean, and there is already happening, but I mean, also there is a problem. Like what we are trying to do now, it's historical change. It's very big, it's kind of a giant thing to do. And it could not be done in half a year, in a year, maybe in a few years. It's just we need more time to this thing to be done, but also we don't have this time. And also we are very limited in our resources, emotional and, I mean, all type of resources. Yeah.
100%. Yeah, thank you so much for that. I also wanted to ask you our favorite last question. Don't know if favorite, because we had loads of really good things that we spoke about today, but our traditional question, which is a little bit about your own perception of Ukrainian identity. But we usually ask all of our guests, what does it mean to be Ukrainian for you in terms of identity, and whether that has changed at all since the 24th of February. So we were wondering what your perspective on this is.
Oh, you know, it's like super difficult question. Yeah, I mean, I never felt so Ukrainian as in 2014 and now, I think. Because in peaceful time, identity is something which you are not reflecting on. It's totally okay not to think about it when nothing is happening. And now I think I'm the most Ukrainian I can get, probably, because I have to be Ukrainian. I have to, you know, perform as Ukrainian for, you know, Western audience, because I'm kind of this, it's a bad thing to say, but I will say it anyway, pet Ukrainian, you know, they will have on events. So, I mean, and I'm not sure if I'm okay with this, because, I mean, sometimes I just want to feel normal. I already had this talk with my friends who are also from Donetsk back in 2014. And when you're in your company and it's like, and you have to say your name and where are you from, and it's already problematic because you know what type of conversation it will trigger. And now it's happening again. Like, hi, I'm Leah, I'm from Ukraine. And everyone is like, fuck, she's Ukrainian. Now we have to talk about war.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That's something I think been on all of our minds recently, because all we want at the end is just a normal life and just to be and just to be who we are and exist without the need to explain ourselves, without the need to argue why we need to, why we have the right to exist. And this is, maybe it's just a normal human thing to do. And I think it's horrendous that Ukrainians are forced into these conversations where we need to do that. But it's also beautiful and fantastic that there are voices like you, Leah, who are doing it anyway and trying to work through all of it and make something out of it and speak out about it. And it's very quintessential Ukrainian thing to do as well. So thank you 100%. So much.
Thank you so much for sharing all of your experience and thoughts with us.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said thank you.
Yes, дякую. And before we close, I want to send a huge hug and thank you to our Patreon sponsors, because Ukrainian Spaces is 100% independent and listener-supported, and we only exist because you keep supporting us through our Patreon page. You can find all the information, if you're not still our sponsor, at ukrainianspaces.com. And this is by no means a charity. We, as our sponsor, you get a lot of extra bonus content, but most importantly, you also get front seat to ask questions to our featured Ukrainians and featured Ukrainian allies. And we're always glad to amplify your voices as well. And we're really grateful you're on this mission with us to amplify more diverse Ukrainian voices and decolonize more Ukrainian conversations. So thank you once again for that. I think I haven't forgotten anything, except one thing is Slava Ukraini.
Slava.
Bye, guys.
Bye.